Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff and today we are joined by a very special guest. He's part of an organisation that is very close to my heart because they've helped me out tremendously over the years. It's Guide Dogs and I'm speaking to the wonderful Jeremy Hill. Thank you so much for coming on board today, Jeremy.
Well, thank you, Goff. Tremendous to talk to you.
Now, I think people just think of guide dogs as cute little dogs and they don't really think about guide dogs as much else. But, of course, Guide Dogs Association, you guys do so much more than just train cute little Labradors. Could you take us through some of the other things that you guys provide, services?
We do. I think when people see guide dogs in the street, they take notice of it, and they are an iconic part of our organisation. But there's an awful lot more to what we do at Guide Dogs and training dogs to become guide dogs. We, for example, myself, I've been in the field of orientation mobility for nearly 32 years, and it's a fantastic field. It starts really right from birth when vision impaired or totally blind babies are born, and we have to get them up to speed as quickly as possible so that they can know all the things that sighted people know about the world and how to use spatial skills and how to get around and how to be independently mobile and that sort of thing. So as you can imagine, there's an awful lot of work that goes into doing that. So orientation, mobility, probably one of the professions that people have never really heard about, and it's so valuable because it's a matter of knowing where you are, being mobile, and being independent in the community. So that's sort of like the starting point of the whole organization, getting people independent on their feet. And then once we get them independent on their feet and they want to go somewhere, like to somewhere in town or use an ATM or be independent in their home, that's when we sometimes have occupational therapists who can teach people how to cook and do all the things that we can do to look after ourselves, keep ourselves healthy. And then if people are struggling with the whole notion of losing their vision or having issues with vision impairment, then we also have a counsellor available too. So there's different parts of the team who do all sorts of different things. And I've moved up from New South Wales. I'm fascinated with the way the Guide Dogs Queensland is all on one campus. So you see everything from the puppies being trained at one end of the campus to people learning how to get around with long canes and things at the other. And then we have a huge residential area too, which enables us to bring people in from regions where they don't have so many services available. And they can come into Bald Hills and they can actually learn the skills and then they go back to where they come from. We visit them there, but it just means we can give them that real injection of really good services and really good training.
That's fantastic, Fenn, because I mean, when I was at school, I used to have O&M training from pretty much year one through to year 12, and it was a free service that I didn't have to pay for, obviously, and I've maintained throughout my life that if I didn't receive that service, there would be no way Beer Nuts Productions would be happening, there would be no way that I would be living the life that I'm currently living. So it's a tremendous thing that really does help blind and vision impaired folks out there, and I don't think it's something that people think about, to be honest.
And people have those services right through their life. I first started training little children in Perth, Western Australia, and I went back there recently to see my brother, and there was a tap on my shoulder, and a 6'2" guy behind me who stood in a very deep voice and, "Hi, I'm Ben, you taught me many years ago." And I'm like, wow, that's good.
Now, another thing that people probably wouldn't be aware of, they probably just think that, you know, a blind guy needs a guide dog, so you give him a dog and away he goes. But the blind person actually needs quite a bit of training, just as the dog does. Can you take us through some of the training that the blind or vision impaired person needs to do to be able to use that dog in its maximum capacity?
Well, to use that dog in its maximum capacity, first of all, we need to know where we're going. The dog is purely the eyes for the person, so you don't lift up one ear and say, "Take me to the bank" or "Take me to the cafe." It's a matter of you actually knowing where you're going. And the dog is a mobility tool like the long cane is or different electronic devices that we have that you use. You've got to be the one who knows where you're getting around. So with the majority of people, they first get around with a long cane, and a lot of our clients stick with the cane. It's a convenient device. They can get around, and they don't need to be looking after a guide dog. But other people progress on to a guide dog. And so they need to have all those spatial skills. They also need somewhere to walk the dogs. Imagine you've got a two-year-old guide dog who needs to be exercised and full of beans. You can't just be walking around your garden. You've actually got to go to places too. But now with the advent of GPS and that sort of thing, it now means you can go to places that you don't necessarily know, but the guide dog is still being your eyes. You're the one who's giving it directions. I think one misconception is that people think you come up a road and you wait for the dog to find a break in the traffic and away you go. It's still the person who's the client who's still making those decisions. And the guide dog, very clever, but in is actual fact working in collaboration with the blind person or the low vision person to get around independently. So they work as a team.
And
so there's a whole lot to it.
And another thing I think that people need to know is there is a big separation, because a guide dog is not a pet. It's a working animal like a sheepdog, for example, or a cattle dog on a farm. So you can't, like a person who has a guide dog, they're not going to be, they're you know, it's not their pet. They don't you know, cuddle it and play with it and all that sort of stuff 24 hours a day. Can you sort of take us through this, how you separate between pet and working animal?
And it's worked the other way too. I've been approached in my many years in New South Wales and places where somebody will say, I've got a very well-behaved pet. I'm losing my vision. Can you train the pet to lead me around? But unfortunately, the pet's got to be trained right from start, from a puppy stage, to behave itself, to be switched on to things around it. Not every puppy makes it, of course, but so it's a real selection process of making sure that the dog is going to bond with the right person. And having trained the dog, there's then a matter of matching the right person up with the dog as well too. So there's quite an intrinsic process that goes through the whole thing. But the number one thing is having enough places to walk to stimulate the dog, enough places for the dog to remain exercised, and working with that close partnership of you and the dog working together.
And so for folks out there who might see a guide dog working in the, you know, in the community, what are some of the general rules? For example, obviously, you don't feed a guide dog. If I'm walking on the street with a guide dog, the last thing I need you to do is come with a tasty schmacko for the dog. So can you just take us through some of the rules for folks out there who might see a guide dog helping somebody? Could you take us through some of the do's and don'ts?
Yes, The do's and don'ts are when the dog is working, they are concentrating. They're a very important part of that vision impaired person's safety. They're actually watching out for obstacles. They're watching out for things. They're concentrating on the work. And as soon as they have the harness on, it means, right, I'm into work. I've got my work clothes on, just like when you and I get ready for work. We know exactly what we're doing. We're concentrating. We've got a job to do. And the client might not be seeing what's going on around them, so they might not realize you're offering it food or something like that. And the surprising thing I have quite often is people actually say, I know I'm not supposed to pat the dog, but can I pat the dog? And you say, well, being not supposed to is not going to help, really, is it? So it's the whole point that the dog is concentrating, and it's very cute, and it's very, people are very tempted to reach out and pat the dog, but bit by bit, we're educating the world that when you see a working dog in action, then just leave them alone. But as soon as you take the harness off, and if we go to expos and things, you'll have a client there with a guide dog with a harness on, you can politely say, can I give your dog a pat? They say, well, hang on a minute, I'll just take the harness off. And that dog then realizes it's not having to do work, and it's concentrating on the job at hand. And, it turns into any other dog. They play like other dogs, chase balls, have fun.
So essentially, if you see somebody with a guide dog out in the community and the dog is working, then just go about your regular life as the blind and vision impaired person is going about his regular life. Would that be a general good rule?
That would be a terrific rule. And I think the other thing is the majority of clients are actually cane users. So one assumption is if you see somebody at the side of the road who's vision impaired, they obviously have a long cane or a guide dog, and they're looking like they're looking a bit mystified. They may just be collecting their thoughts to make sure I'm on the right street corner or I've got the right traffic light. Sometimes it takes a bit of configuration. Don't just go up to them and grab their arm and assume they need help. Say, excuse me, can I give you a hand? Can I help you? Because that voice comes out of nowhere,
yes,
doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And you just say, right, oh, thank you very much. Actually, I wouldn't mind grabbing your elbow across this road. I'm in a new area. And so it's just a communication thing, really.
Absolutely. Now, what about the rights of a guide dog? Because I've heard some terrible stories about people denying services because you've got a dog. So, like, dogs, they are, correct me if I'm wrong, but guide dogs are essentially another human. So they can go into taxis, they can go into restaurants. They're not, could you tell us maybe a bit about the rights of a guide dog?
Sure. If you're a vision impaired person with a guide dog, the guide dog is your mobility tool, just as we were saying, long canes and things are too, but they're your mobility tool that enables you to get into anywhere or any place that you want to get to. So if the dog is refused access, then it obviously means that you can't go in there because you no longer got your mobility tool. And I think sometimes people are trying to do the right thing. People who run cafes and restaurants, not necessarily management, it may be people who work in cafes and restaurants, abide by food regulations. And on the food regulations, it says no animals or animals to be near food preparation areas. And they haven't quite realized that there's actually an overriding rule to that, that people with a guide dog actually are allowed in. The good thing being, of course, those dogs are very well trained. They'll tuck themselves under the table out of the way as well. And they're not going to be any trouble at all to patrons in the cafe. But that person does need a guide dog to be able to access that cafe. And they have every right to access that restaurant, cafe or hotel or wherever, just like you and I can. So it's just really, I suppose.
Would you say it's an extension of the person? So you wouldn't refuse Charlie Johnson entry to whatever service. So you don't refuse Charlie Johnson if he's got a guide dog, because it's just the dog is just an extension of him.
Charlie Johnson goes wherever his guide dog goes as well, and it's a collaboration between the two, and one can't really get around without the other. So it's very important that people realise it. I think once people get to know people with a long cane or a guide dog, they start to have that rapport and they start to understand. But I think there's just sometimes a bit of a clash or mistaken regarding the rules. So just to recap, guide dogs can go anywhere. They can go in a taxi. And they don't have to go in the back of the taxi. You don't have to have a wagon or extra space in the back. They go just in the wheel arch or wheel hub, rather, where you sit, where you put your feet. They tuck themselves in very, very tidy. They're no trouble at all. The guide dogs can also go in aeroplanes as well. Not many of those flying around at the moment, but they can go in the aeroplanes. They can go on trains, anywhere that public transport will go. The only place they can't go is usually quarantine areas such as zoos and in certain surgery parts of hospitals too.
Cool. Now, there is a bit of a waiting list. So if you do require a guide dog, you don't just knock on the door and they give you a dog. There's a bit of a waiting list because there's only so many dogs that you can train at a time. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of what sort of a waiting list time people have to wait to get a dog?
Sure, and we haven't really mentioned COVID at these present times either, but despite the coronavirus this year, we've managed to match 7 Queenslanders since March with guide dogs, which is extremely difficult and tricky because it's very hard to see clients at present. It's starting to improve, but I think so far we've managed to help 700 Queenslanders with those various services across the board. We have had a number of guide dogs, but before they do the guide dog training, they need to do, we've had about 341 people who've done O&M training this year. So it's pretty impressive despite the issues we've had with COVID.
And what kind of, now obviously it takes a lot of money to run the services that you run. I mean, like as you explained, there's O&M services. Mm. You've got to bring people in from out of town to and you've got to put them up. You've got to train them. You've got to train the dogs. It's a very expensive, guide dogs takes a lot of coin to make it happen. So could you tell us about what kind of government assistance is available to you guys?
We're very lucky now, Gough, through the National Disability Insurance Scheme, but that can only assist people who are under the age of 65. So we still have a lot of people who are over 65 that we provide services for. But for the ones who are under that 65 who can get the NDIS, that's extremely assistive. It costs about $50,000 to right from scratch to actually breed the dog, to raise the dog, and to train the dog. And of course, we've been saying before, not all dogs are successful. Some go into other services as well. But the community still provides, out of all that money, despite the fantastic government funding that we get, the community still provides 90% of the funding that we require to run the services of vision impaired people in general. So it's a small part, and we're so pleased that, and so thankful to the community for continuing to provide services, even when times when times are tough as present.
Well, maybe you could tell folks how they can assist. So if somebody's listening to this and they want to throw a few dollars guide dogs way, how can they do that? And also also just to make sure that people understand that they're going to the right places. They don't want to be donating to some sort of scam or anything like that. So can you give everybody the correct channels to go to if they wish to help and donate?
Sure. Well, we've been supported by the public in Queensland for over 60 years of actually assisting fellow Queenslanders with vision impairment. But probably the best way, because there's various ways you can sponsor puppies, you can donate, you can do one-off donation if you'd like. I know kids just put coins in those gorgeous little money boxes in the shopping centre. Fantastic story I had the other day, somebody in Kelvin Grove shopping centre where I go to, had I noticed its nose, the black nose, was getting a little bit more sort of worn out. And I noticed one day it was a nice, fresh little black nose on this money box. Not talking about a real dog, but the money box. And apparently one of the girls who worked at the cash outs or checkouts had actually got some black nail varnish one day and given it a bit of a paint up on the nose. I thought that was another way of donating to guide dogs. But yeah, there's all sorts of ways, but to say it's extremely expensive business. So have a look at our website. We also have tickets we sell, lottery tickets and that sort of thing. We can, coming up to Christmas now, people can look at our shop and purchase items through that too. Everything helps. So we appreciate it. If everybody donates a little bit, we can continue to provide and expand on services too.
And what is the website address? Where do they need to go?
If they go to, just do on the Google search, Guide Dogs Queensland. We do have Guide Dogs Australia, which is an umbrella group for all the guide dog organisations across Australia, but Guide Dogs Queensland will take them to their local guide dog service. And as I say, the campus is in Bald Hills. They have various shops and fundraising things around Queensland, but that's where we have our campus. That's where we do all our training. And it's a fantastic organisation to be part of. And we really thank the general community for all their support.
And of course, for those folks who might be listening in other places, either around Australia or overseas, I'm sure a Google search will be able to direct you to your local guide dog branch, and you could send them an email and ask them the best ways you could contribute with them, because obviously there's guide dogs associations all over the world that you can assist with. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jeremy, we've just about come to the end. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap all this up?
Yeah, there is a little thing. I think people don't approach guide dogs until the ophthalmologist or eye doctor will say, look, there's nothing else I can do for you. And I just want people to know that when that's a medical term, it actually, when it comes to services like ours, there actually is a lot we can do. And we can provide a lot of training and services. So even if somebody knows a relative that's been said, well, you're losing your vision, there's two things. You don't have to be totally blind to receive our services. And the second thing is there's an awful lot we can do. And if you don't have access to government funding, we're still able to assist you. We turn nobody away.
That's actually a really wonderful point that you make, because, you know, doctors can be very blunt in their assessment, and they could just say, yep, you've lost your sight, go home and just sit in the couch and do nothing for the rest of your life. And that is not an option. There is plenty you can do and plenty of services that you could do that are going to assist you and help you. So that's actually a really, really valid point to make.
It is. There's certainly a lot you can do, whether it's regaining what you were enjoying doing before, or as I said with children, a really important thing to do them is to start to give them the opportunities that their peers have. And I think when people get told that they're going to go blind or lose their vision, they have their own little ideas. Oh, that means I'm not going to get out and about. It means I can't do things. I can't access the media like other people do. But there is the world is opening up, especially with technology.
Absolutely.
And of course, And radio and podcasts will always be accessible to people who have a vision impairment.
Absolutely. And well, look, as everybody who knows Beer Nuts Productions knows, I'm legally blind and I make movies for a living. So, I mean, I don't allow it to stop me from living the life that I want to live. I want to be a contributing member of society. And so I am. That's essentially how it should be. So, yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming on the Beer Nuts Productions podcast today.
Thank you for the invitation. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, like I say, if you want to find out more about guide dogs, just Google your local guide dogs branch and maybe drop them a friendly email to see what you can do to assist them. And of course, with this podcast. It's the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. So make sure you like and subscribe and leave a friendly comment in the comment section. And of course, beernutsproductions.com is the place you need to go for all your entertainment needs. So thank you again, Jeremy. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you next time.